It's like drinking from a fire hose. Hi, I'm Tim Villegas. This is Thinkinclusive, MCIE's podcast that features conversations with people doing the work of inclusion in the real world. Wow. Inclusion has never been so relevant, and there is a lot to keep up with. So I wanted to start off the episode with just some places that I'm keeping tabs on rapidly changing information. And this is in no way an exhaustive list, but Jen Newton from Teaching is Intellectual, Dom Kelly from the New Disabled South, Jenna Rufo, Empower Ed School Solutions, the Council for Exceptional Children, and Council for Parent Attorneys and Advocates. Those are just what is on top of mind for me. If you have a good source of information and want to share it with me, please send me an email at tvillegas@mcie.org. That's tvillegas@mcie.org. I'd love to know what channels you trust. Okay, so this week on the podcast is a very timely episode with my guests, Val Brown and Andrew Lefkowitz from the Integrated Schools podcast. Here's a real quick summary of what we talked about. We start off by diving into the origins of integrated schools, which all began with Courtney McKinnon's bold decision to enroll her kids in a local school that was predominantly non-white. It was fascinating to hear how that one decision sparked the growth of integrated schools and eventually led to the creation of the podcast to broaden the conversation about integration and inclusion. Now, sadly, after Courtney's tragic passing, Andrew and Val stepped up to be co-hosts and carry on her mission through the podcast. We talk about some really important topics like inclusive education, the societal and educational barriers we face, how privilege and systemic structures impact our schools and communities. And Val really drove home the point about the need for ongoing conversations about race and inclusion, while Andrew emphasized creating welcoming spaces that truly embrace diversity. I'm hearing a theme: diversity, equity, inclusion. Just something to consider. Like I said, inclusion is where it's at, folks. Before we get into my conversation with Val and Andrew, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this season, IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, every learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Interested in learning more? Visit IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. Okay, after a short break, my conversation with Val Brown and Andrew Lefkowitz. Catch you on the other side. Val Brown and Andrew Lefkowitz, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Hey, thank you so much.
It's so fun to talk to podcasters.
Well, I am just excited to be on this side of the interview. Andrew and I don't have this opportunity very often, but thank you for inviting us. I know. Aren't we wonderful to talk to?
Okay. Everyone out there listening, everyone that has a podcast, you need to have Andrew and Val on your podcast. There, I said
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
It's going to happen. Exactly. Exactly. I want to talk about your podcast, Integrated Schools Podcast. But before we get into that, I'd love to know, like, how did this begin? Like, how did you two meet? Why was it important for you to create a podcast? Like, what's your origin story?
Andrew, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So, Integrated Schools, the organization, started back in 2015. Excuse me, a woman named Courtney McKitten had decided to enroll her kids in the school down the street that all of her white privileged friends said nobody goes to, but that she walked by every day and saw hundreds of kids going in and out of and thought, well, somebody goes there. Maybe my kids should also go there, and made all sorts of mistakes in how she showed up there, but also found it to be a really sort of fulfilling and important process, and thought there were probably other people out there grappling with similar sort of questions about the messages that we get about what it means to be a good parent and the messages we get about what it means to be a good citizen and where those things sometimes are in conflict. And so she started what was basically a blog out of her kitchen and started kind of gathering people who were thinking in similar ways. I found her in March of 2018 and joined a virtual book club and started connecting with her. And then they were at the time talking about starting a podcast. I'm an audio engineer by training. And so said, oh, I could help with that. And so Courtney and I launched the podcast back in November of 2018 as a place to have conversations between parents. What Courtney was doing a whole lot of as sort of an organizer was getting on the phone with people and having long drawn out conversations, which were very important, but also not really scalable. And so she said, well, what if we recorded some of those conversations and put them out for people to listen to and see if there's any interest in it? And There was an far more interest than we had ever thought there would be. And, you know, downloads kept growing and wow, there's like a lot of appetite here for these conversations. We'll keep having them. Tragically, at the end of 2019, December 30th, she was struck by a car and killed outside of her house, which sort of threw the whole organization up in the air. We didn't really know what was going to happen, if there was going to be enough people behind it to kind of keep things going. And a team of us came together and said, we're going to keep this vision alive, keep it going. So I hosted the podcast for about a year on my own with a few kind of guest hosts along the way. And in that interim period, we were having a lot of conversations. The organization started out as really kind of focused on white parents, white and or privileged, but really was largely kind of white parents talking to white parents, which we think is like a really important piece of the work. Like one of our advisory board members, Matt Gonzalez, has a piece called White Lips to White Ears, that white people hear things differently from other white people. And so there's real value in that. And we started running up against the kind of limitations of conversations about integration in segregated spaces. And kind of in the meantime, Val had found us on social media and started reaching out. And I'll let you take it from there, Val.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was probably November of maybe a little bit earlier, but certainly the fall of 2019, where I reached out to Integrated Schools. At the same time, I was organizing some teachers through a platform called hashtag Clear the Air, where we would talk about the intersections between race, history, and education. And so it was a multiracial group that would come together weekly. We would have these discussions publicly because we thought our public learning was really important in order to push the conversation forward. And then one of my colleagues at the time said, hey, there's an organization of parents who are doing similar work. You should connect with them. And so I reached out. And I just sent a DM to whoever was behind the handle for Integrated Schools Podcast. And I was like, hey, let's try to figure out how to do some work together. I'm really excited about bringing caregivers and educators together. And when I finally heard back, that was unfortunately after Courtney's death. Mm. And so like right when we were going to join forces as organizations, she passed. And we stayed close, you know, because I cared about the work that the organization was doing. I hadn't had a chance to have a conversation, a personal conversation with Courtney, but I was super moved by the work that she did. And so I wanted to be as involved as I possibly could. And I asked Andrew and a few others who were leading the effort. I was like, okay, this is like Integrated Schools. Like, do I fit here? as a Black mom from North Carolina? And I think the answer was, yeah. And, you know, we aren't really having conversations that you might find valuable. And I think from my previous work with educators, multiracial group of educators, I always felt like we don't know how well we're doing in this conversation until we start talking to one another. So I can have my affinity group, but until we come together, we're just testing it out, right? And so the rubber really hits the road when we have these conversations in community, nuanced conversations. And so when Andrew asked me to co-host the podcast as his second choice, I said, of course.
She's going to hold that over you.
I am.
Eventually. Eventually she'll get over it.
Eventually. And it's worked out because now it's been several seasons and we're joined at the hip.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it sounds organic, right? You know, just like Val, you're interested in the content and you're like, how can we collaborate?
Yeah.
And I'm sure Andrew, as someone who does this by myself and doesn't have a co-host, I think it would be beneficial to have that sounding board and just talking about things and having different perspectives like that. Yeah,
for sure. Because, you know, we obviously record, but more than that, we have conversations about what is happening in our own lives and how we are showing up in the work. And so having a partner that you can be really authentic with and you can say, here's where I'm struggling. Here's where I'm not so sure. Hey, Andrew, I think this. And he's like, hey, Val, have you thought about this perspective? I think that has deepened our relationship significantly. And we want to use that as a model for our listeners as well.
So it sounds like you're originally, at least, the point of view of the podcast was about parents or for parents. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's still primary. Our primary audience, I would say, is parents and caregivers, people who are, you know, directly in charge of making decisions about where their kids are going to go to school, how they're going to show up in those school communities. We definitely have a lot of teachers and administrators and even, you know, people who are sort of connected to education who also listen. But I think would say, yeah, definitely are, you know, as we go into an interview, we're thinking like, what's the message that parents and caregivers need to hear from this guest that we have?
Gotcha.
And to add to that, like all of our caregivers and parents also do something else. And so I think that part is important because the ways in which people show up in their homes can have an impact on the ways they show up in the world, where they decide to live, even after their kids age out of a public school system, what they advocate for, maybe how they vote, how they decide to spend their funds, what signs they put in their yards. Those are all things that, you know, because your life continues once your kids age out of schools, and there's still work that can be done and should be done on behalf of the mission and vision that we have.
On that front, and I haven't told you this, Val. I just had this conversation like two nights ago with a woman from Denver who is a physician, and she was saying like she listens to the podcast all the time. She really loves it, and there was some episode she couldn't even remember what episode it was. But she said it like completely shifted how she showed up as a physician. It made her realize the ways in which underserved communities continue to be underserved in the medical field. And she like looked around and was like, well, we should do something about that. I was so deeply moved by that. Like,
that's what's up.
Here's the message, you know, kind of filtering out into the rest of the world. It was really special.
So not only should everyone invite us onto their podcast, we also are training doctors. That's what I heard.
That is also what I heard. I want to put this out into the universe. I'm working on just a little kind of like side research project with a narrative podcast series that we produce called Inclusion Stories. It's a 5-part series, and I was able to visit some fully inclusive schools in the state of Washington and Maryland. And then I shared some stories of families that have been advocating for their children to be fully included. So children with Down syndrome or children with other significant support needs. And so I'm working with some professors in some education programs, and we are going to track like changes in attitudes and beliefs about inclusion.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Before and after they listen to the podcast series. And so it just, what you said was, I hear that, I mean, I know, I think we instinctively know that podcasts change our attitudes and beliefs, but I have not yet seen any research or data on that. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd like for more people to do that. So,
hey, I love that.
You know, just if anyone is listening, I want to do that. So reach out to Andrew and Val and to me, and we'll figure it out, because I think that that is really powerful. We need to show podcasting is such a important medium for growth like that, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about inclusive schools. Like your podcast is, you're thinking about what message parents will be taking away from your conversations. Typically, we have educators, teachers, principals, district administrators that listen to Think Inclusive. And so as we're thinking about and having this conversation, I just want you to think about, what message do you want to share with educators about inclusive schools? And again, we typically focus on aspects about disability, ableism, how to create a more inclusive environment in our schools and districts with the lens of disability. But where do you see, what do you see as a barrier to more inclusive schools? And you can answer it, you know, with your point of view as well. So like, we don't necessarily have to talk about disability. Where are you, Andrew, like in the world?
I'm actually in Oakland, California.
Oh, fun.
Okay. Yeah. I'm traveling for work, but I.
Tim, where are you?
Driving down to San Diego today.
Oh, fun.
Are you, do you live in California typically?
I live in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, Denver.
Yeah.
I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, nice. I'm in Charlotte.
A suburb. So Marietta, if you're
nice.
Familiar.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. So
yes.
I heard you
yes.
pass it to me.
Yes.
So what are the barriers to full inclusion in our schools? That's what I'm answering, right?
Yeah.
Is that okay? That's the question I'm answering. I'm just making sure we're good. Okay. I'm looking at this from probably, I'll start with my educator lens. So I'm an educator by training, spent time as a classroom teacher, a district administrator, worked in a couple of nonprofits focused on education. And I think
Teacher of the Year.
I was
teacher of the
teacher
year,
of the
don't
year
miss that.
For our school district. Yes. And I have the opportunity to be in community with lots of educators all the time. And so I think one of the significant barriers is, the chicken or the egg thing, but we aren't having enough conversations about disability and inclusion generally. Now, I believe wholeheartedly this should start as early as possible, in the same way that I believe the conversation should start as early as possible around race, right? And unfortunately, if you do not have a family unit where someone has a disability, hidden or visible, most of the time it's not going to come up in conversation, right? Because our world and our schools are designed primarily for able-bodied, neurotypical folks. And so we don't have the muscle to even engage in the conversation in a way that does not feel like it's an add-on, instead of here's the fullness of our human experience here are all the different ways that we are human and how we show up. And I personally beat myself up sometimes about not knowing enough, right? I'm like, dang it. If there's any other language I should know, it should be sign language. Like, what am I doing? Like, why don't I know that, right? I've shared on the podcast, once I was diagnosed with hypertension, recognizing like the ableism that I had for myself, right? I should be able to fix this. I shouldn't have to like deal with this. I shouldn't need medication to like get through the day. And so constantly battling these ideas of ableism, one, and then not having enough just regular conversation around it without feeling shame or ignorance or guilt or what, all of those things that come up. And so because we do not have those conversations, people rather like turn their head or pass it to a specialist and don't feel like it is their responsibility. And so I think that's a significant barrier to why this conversation isn't more prevalent. I know on the podcast, and Andrew and I have talked about this before, we recognize like integrated schools means integrating all types of folks, right? And so we are pushing ourselves to make sure we're not only talking about race, but that we're talking about other social identities as well, whether it's social economic status, ability, disability, et cetera. Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, I mean, that's certainly like a growing edge for us. You know, I think we, both Val and I, come with some experience having conversations about race. We don't have nearly as much experience or practice with conversations around disability. And so we have had fewer of them on the podcast. You know, I mean, you know, from making podcasts, like the things that you're comfortable talking about that seem interesting to you are the things that you just keep making episodes about. And so we have really been pushing ourselves to broaden that conversation. I think, you know, kind of from a parent caregiver perspective, you know, thinking about barriers to more inclusive classrooms, I think about the sense of pressure that we create around parenting. And the ways we communicate about how high the stakes are for our own kids. And then you couple that with the ways that we think that we're talking about things like school quality, when really what we're talking about is things like, you know, racial or economic privilege. And so the messages that we get about what is or not good for kids tends to be focused around things like test scores, things like access to, you know, activities and whatnot. And not things like access to shared humanity, access to learning from people who are different from us. And I think that, you know, that applies racially, that applies socioeconomically, that certainly applies with ability and disability, that the more we think that the stakes are really high for our kids and the only way to keep our kids sort of doing well, so to speak, is to give them these things that we think mean a good education, we end up pushing away from more inclusivity, pushing away from spaces where everyone is actually welcomed equally.
Yeah. I hear that. And it reminds me of the arguments sometimes from, you know, educators and parents, that the pushback that sometimes districts who want to move forward with inclusive practices saying, no, if those kids come into our classroom, we're going to have to water down the curriculum. Or we're going to, you know, everyone will suffer because those kids are coming in and diluting, you know, the efficacy of what I'm doing. And so what you said about like the stakes, right? The stakes feel really high. But a lot of the times I feel like it's because people don't actually know how to integrate schools.
Correct.
They just whenever we talk about inclusion, especially like if we're just engaging with a partner district or someone who is like, you know, kind of like on the edge thinking about, you know, doing this work, they automatically assume you're just going to put all the kids with significant support needs and disabilities in with everyone else. And that's it. We're done. And it's like, no, like, why would you think that?
Right.
But that is exactly what they think. They think you're just putting everyone together and hooray, we've included the school. But there's so much more to that. And I know that y'all know that.
I mean, the parallels to the conversations we have all the time are just sort of jumping out of me right now. We talk a lot about like the difference between desegregation and integration, right? Like we can move bodies around and, you know, people will have the exact same conversations. You know, they won't, well, even nowadays, probably people will, but certainly like less likely to get the explicit, the black kids will bring it down. But there are certainly a lot of those kids conversations that happen around ideas of desegregated schools. And we know that just simply shoving a bunch of kids into a school building together, into a classroom together, is not the answer. You know, like giving kids an early opportunity to experience racism, like earlier in their life, is not the goal of true integration, right? So creating spaces that are welcoming, creating spaces that actually do the work, which is real work. And I think to your point, right, we don't have great examples and we don't do great training. And like there's a skill set involved in creating truly inclusive spaces. That I think probably applies no matter, you know, kind of on what dimension you are trying to include.
Yeah. As you were speaking, I started to think about how as adults we're thrown together in all of these different ways. Right. And how I think that's why I have so much hope for schools as really being a place where we can learn how to be better together. And so when we come out of like a formal learning experience, that we aren't being harmful to others, that we are actually considering their humanity and what they have to offer because we've been taught that in the places where it's most possible, right? So again, I mentioned like your family unit might not have someone of difference. Everyone in your family might be exactly the same, right? And so your family won't necessarily be equipped to do it as well as a school, right, that is really actively going after this work. And so I think another barrier, and maybe this is tied to ableism, I have not, it's probably some research connected to it, is perfectionism, right? We feel like we have to know it all perfectly before we attempt it at all, right? And I tell Andrew all the time, white folks are going to make mistakes. Like, let's just check that off. Like, boop, check. I made lots of mistakes. And I don't want, when we're talking about race, I don't want white folks to feel like I cannot engage in this conversation because I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake. You are going to make a mistake and it's going to be painful. Someone's feelings are going to get hurt. Hopefully you'll have someone who has, can grant you the grace to get you through it. But if not, there's a book, I'm sure, or to write. And so there are, recognizing like we're not going to be perfect at the trying to figure out how to make fully inclusive schools, and yet we cannot keep us from trying. There we go.
Let's talk about immigration for a second.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Why not, right? Why
let's
not?
Let's do it.
Okay, so I don't know when this is going to post, but in the news recently, there's been talk about specific Haitian immigrants that over the last, I don't know, however many years have been moving to Springfield, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of like really nasty, awful things said about these immigrants. And I listened to the, you know, Republican nominee for vice president say some of the same things that people say about inclusion in schools people moving in, right? We're talking about placement, right? We're talking about where people actually have their presence. The city was not equipped to receive 20,000 Haitian immigrants or whatever. And not saying like, well, how do we equip this city to welcome these immigrants? That's not what the discussion is. The discussion is, this should have never happened. Right. And it's the same argument that I hear that, well, we're not equipped for these students. We don't know how to support them. They need to go back to where they were before. But again, we're not talking about, well, what do you need in order to support these learners? What do you need? And how can we equip you? How can you feel equipped to welcome these students? So anyways, I try not to get too political on this podcast, but I think I think that was a relevant example.
Yeah. Yeah. This past week, I reached out to several of my Haitian American friends just to apologize for us being the shithole country. Because and I listened to another NPR article our story this morning, just about the impact of the rhetoric that is happening in Springfield, Ohio. Pause real quick. I don't know if I can say that S word on the podcast. I love America. I love America.
I will either put an explicit on this episode or I'll bleep it out. I don't know.
Also, please whatever. Let the people totally know fine. I do love America. That's not what I'm saying.
I also love America as long as
everybody.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We're talking about on the record.
On the record. Everyone here loves America.
I'm you, plus S-A. Minus. But.
Okay. Everybody on here loves America. Okay. USA. USA.
Whoa. I didn't say that.
The two people of color on here love America. Okay. That's all we got. So I'll go over. But I apologize to my Haitian American friends about the rhetoric that is happening around their culture and their community, because it's devastating. We know that there's a significant number of bomb threats of public places, including schools, that is happening as a result of this rhetoric. And that folks are just trying to live their lives. And so when you mention, you know, the city wasn't equipped, I go back to what I shared earlier around, like, when you said that initially, I was like, okay, does they need more housing? Like, you know, how was the city not ready? And, you know, what I gather is the people were not ready because, again, we have not taken the time to say, like, there are so many beautiful examples of humanity in our world. And we are struggling right now as a country to teach not only US history, but world history. We are struggling to find ways to communicate across difference. We instead decide that we're going to ban those conversations. We don't want to have them at all. And it's so short-sighted. And maybe it's not short-sighted for the folks who are advocating for that. But it feels so short-sighted for folks who are going along with it and not fighting for a different outcome, right? Because we will get nowhere if we don't get there together. I believe that wholeheartedly. And so it saddens me that same rhetoric that you're hearing about Haitian Americans or Haitian immigrants in Springfield is also what you hear when it comes to creating inclusive spaces for disabled students. And I'm not surprised, right? I'm not surprised. I think what pains me is the vitriol that you hear from educators and other adults to children who literally are here, not of their own doing, you know, who have shown up in their full humanity and pushing them away. And so I get real sassy with educators who use that type of language, regardless of who they are othering at the time, because that is not why you're here. I prefer you not be in the space if that's the energy that you're going to bring. And I want you to be, want those educators to be adult enough to say, here's what I don't know. Here's what I need to know. Here's what I'm willing to know. because I'm here to love and educate children as part of my profession. And breaking news, even if you're not an educator, you still have to figure out how to do it. You still have to figure out how to do it, because our world will continue to be a diverse one in which we will have people join our communities that may not have lived there before. We'll have to figure out a way. And I'm using air quotes because it baffles me. It like truly baffles me. If you've moved to any other city ever, you know that like the city has an opportunity to welcome you, right? People in the city have an opportunity to welcome you. And you don't want people to say, hey, you're not originally from Atlanta. Get out of here, right? And I don't, help me. This is when I get a headache. So I regularly get just oppression headaches, white supremacy headaches during our interviews.
Oh no.
Andrew, help me out. You see I'm getting frustrated, Andrew.
I feel it coming on.
I need to breathe.
I mean, I think it is. Yes, it is short-sighted. It is easy to play on people's fears, yeah. And there is some sort of, and I don't know. Like, I sometimes wonder how much I'm really willing to buy into. Like, some sort of natural tendency to, you know, fear "quote unquote" other. Yeah, I think there was like probably something in human nature about that. But like, we overcome human nature about all sorts of things all the time. That is something that can also be overcome. And I think to me, where is the desire to overcome that come from? And this is back to what Val was saying earlier about the power of schools, the potential in a school space is like, what a great spot to show the next generation of politicians, the next generation of police officers, the next generation of, you know, doctors and civic leaders, when they're in school, to show them that their life, their world, that we are all better off when everyone has a spot at the table.
Yeah.
Right. That there's not a risk to losing yourself when you welcome somebody else in. Actually, yourself grows bigger, that your ability to see the world broadens, that your ability to understand the human experience is richer and broader by welcoming people in. And if that's the mindset that we can instill in kids by creating that schools. And again, like, it's not just about shoving them together. It's not just about putting 20,000 Haitian immigrants into Springfield. It's about, what does it look like when they get there? How are we creating systems and structures and a mindset whereby we can all benefit? Because if we do that, then Springfield's a much better place because of it. Our schools are much better places because of it. Eventually our country is a much better place because of it. But we have to go in with that mindset that the payoff is worth it. Yeah, it's going to take some work. There's going to be some adjustment. We're going to have to, you know, change how certain things work in order to accommodate. But if we do, we're all better off for it in the end.
Yeah. I was just daydreaming about signs all over the city that said, like, we're so glad you're here. Welcome to Springfield. Yeah. And how that alone would make a significant difference, not only for the folks who are moving to Springfield, but also for the community itself to see, like, hey, I'm sure there's people who don't want to be welcoming. I'm a Libra. I always want to be welcoming. and so it would just make a significant difference. And that same energy in our schools, right? We're so glad you're here. You are welcomed here. I remember as a classroom teacher, I looped with my students, and looping for listeners means like you teach them, say, in like sixth grade, and then you move up with them as a teacher to seventh grade and then eighth grade. So I had looped with this group of students from sixth grade to eighth grade. And whenever we got a new student, especially in eighth grade, we had to stop who we were to make sure that there was a real orientation. Because we understand that you are coming into a community that has been together for 3 years already, right? You are absolutely going to feel like the outsider if we don't stop and let you know, hey, we welcome you. Just as you are, everybody here is as goofy as you think we are, you know, and you belong here as well. Right. And that takes intentionality. And that's certainly, you know, maybe it's not something the mayor is thinking about, but it's certainly what educators can think about in each of their classrooms. Right. And I believe it helps people not only feel welcome, but feel special, and recognizes that everyone in that room, in that classroom, has value that we appreciate and we want to include in our community.
Andrew, did you want to add anything?
Well, I think about we had Dr. Shanette Porter on the podcast, and she's got a bunch of research around belonging and, you know, a sense of inclusion and belonging. And she talks about, you know, that true belonging is about the space is different because you are in it. Mm-hmm. The space changes. There's one thing to say you are allowed into this space that is not going to shift in any way, but you truly belong when you have made the space different in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the vision that we have to hold on to, is like, how is you're welcome here. We're glad you're here, and we're ready for things. It's again, you know, like the more kind of, like out of control the world feels, the more we want to hold on to the things that we know, and the more change feels, you know, dangerous or scary or whatever, but to embrace it and say, yeah, this place is going to be different because you're here. And that's good, because we think that the different is actually going to be better, that we can hold on to that kind of idea of true belonging. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, certainly have thought about it since we had her on, thought about it a lot in the context of schools, but I think it's also true in the context of neighborhoods, in the context of cities, in the context of the country.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about power too, as well. And so, when you are in a place of privilege, like a social identity with any privilege, and you're learning, right, and you're trying to grow, you have the opportunity to use your power differently. And so, what I think is common amongst white folks who are recognizing this, my dear co-host as well, is that you recognize, hey, we need to elevate some voices of color in this space, because I recognize I have the power to do that. There's brilliant Black women and Black men out here that we aren't learning from, and we're going to center them in our conversation. I had the opportunity to host a conference for educators a couple of years ago, and I said, you know what? One of our speakers is going to be a deaf person, capital D, right? Like, and we are going to be the ones that will figure it out, right? So we want to send, like, we want it to be very normal that we are learning from a deaf educator. She is speaking sign language. We have the interpreter for us. It's not the other way around, right? And so I think when you recognize, like, you're learning, right? We often talk on the podcast, like, we don't want the learning to just stop here with you just listening to us. We do want you to go out into the community and take some action. Recognize that you have some power to do this. And a lot of that is elevating the perspectives and the stories, as you all are doing here on the podcast, of folks who might not have center stage because we're taking up all the space. And so use your power. That feels important to say.
I'm interested in why this work is important to each of you. You usually have a reason. So who'd like to go first?
Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have like two versions of the story, one of which has like a whole lot of more like of my own choosing. And then I kind of look at where I grew up and my family and these other pieces, I realized that maybe I didn't actually have as much say in it as I like to give myself credit for, you know. But I was one of a small handful of white kids in my elementary school, more white kids by the time I got to high school. But certainly that experience shaped me in all sorts of ways. And I would not say it was like a perfectly inclusive educational environment, but it certainly, you know, had a lasting impact on me. It was something that I wanted for my kids. And I think, I mean, in some ways I care about this because of Nicole Hannah Jones, to be honest. Her podcast, This American Life, in 2016, I think, The Problem We All Live With. I was not really thinking about education, thinking about school. I was like, okay, like we'll follow what everybody says, what all the messages are, which is like, get your kid into the quote unquote best school, which inevitably means the whitest and wealthiest school that you can. Mm-hmm. And that podcast and her writing and her work since then made me realize that there was really tension between my sort of social justice minded values that I had, you know, come up with, and the messaging that I was getting about what it meant to be a good parent, about what it meant to do the best for my kid. And I think it was, you know, in trying to grapple with that tension and say, like, why, first of all, why do these things feel like they're tension? And why does all the messaging say I shouldn't even look at that as tension? That I shouldn't even think about that there is tension there? And that was the spark of curiosity that led me to find integrated schools in the first place that, you know, has led me into these conversations with Val and to kind of try to learn as much as really to try to understand these competing messages that I was getting as a parent.
No, that's awesome.
At a community member.
That's an awesome answer. And you make me reflect, like, I don't know when this started for me either. Right. Like when did it actually start? What are the inciting incidences that, got me to this place? I'll speak of one. And it was, we were going to our neighborhood school, and my son was going to go to our neighborhood school, just literally one block over, for kindergarten. And we were driving by the school one day, and I was like, hey, that's where you're going to go to kindergarten. And his first question ever to me about race was, will I have a brown teacher? It was literally his first question ever about race. And, you know, we had talked about race. He knew we were Black people. You know, we had representation in the home with our books and stuff. But that was like the first actual question he asked me about it. And at that moment, that actually coincided with a couple of different things, because February of that year, Trayvon Martin was killed in our school district. So in our county, across the street from one of our schools. And I had been named like district teacher of the year. So I felt that point of like, how am I going to use my platform and my voice in this moment to help answer this kid's question? And the truth to that answer was, he had two opportunities, because I knew the schools. I knew the elementary school, the middle school where I worked, and the high school. He had two opportunities to have a brown teacher that were like almost guaranteed. One was me in middle school. One was his father in the high school. And I felt so convicted to do something in that moment. And to Andrew's point, like, I think our family lines and the decisions that our parents have made and our grandparents have made have led us to be action-oriented, social justice-oriented people. And so when one of those things happen in your life, you just feel like it's go time, right? You're like, this go time. I have been exposed. I know more. I am wired to do something about it. And so I'm going to try. And I want to leave audiences with that, listeners with that. Like, our attempts are just that. We are just trying. Andrew's like, I got some skills on the podcast. So yeah, sign me up. And I'm like, hey, I know a couple of people that I can ask questions to and try to push the conversation forward. And that's really what this work requires from each of us.
Yeah, do what you can with what you have.
That's it.
Right. And your strengths.
That's it.
I was just talking about this actually on the, as a reflection on one of the recent episodes about the having audio experience and now learning video, because that's a whole other thing. I really love it. I love it. And so it's not a heavy lift for me. Mm-hmm. And this is how I can contribute. Mm-hmm. Right. So what are your strengths? What are the things that you're good at that you can move this work forward, whatever your context is? And you don't have to wait to be a leader. Like, you don't have to you don't have to be a principal. You don't have to be a superintendent. It would be great if you were, but, you know, you just got to start with what you have and with your circle of influence. So really appreciate. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say and you can make this difference outside of education as well. So I like to go for walks on trails, right? How can I advocate for more inclusive trails so that other folks with different abilities can also enjoy the trail, right? And so it can be around whatever your passion area is. It doesn't only have to be in schools, because again, we're trying to make a beautiful, inclusive world, you know, not
absolutely
only, not only classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes all of us. Like, the only way we get there is together, right? So everybody's got a role to play in it.
Beautiful. Where can people find Integrated Schools.
Yeah, integratedschools.org is our website. Our podcast is there. You can find the podcast, the Integrated Schools Podcast, at everywhere you get your podcasts. We're there. We are always looking to hear your own stories. If, you know, something in this conversation that we just had just sparked something from you and you think that we should talk about on the podcast, we have a voicemail line, speakpipe.com/integrated schools. People can leave us voice memos. We're always love to hear from listeners about the things they're grappling with, because we believe that the, you know, the podcast should be a place for community conversation, and we're always looking to grow that community.
Tim, we got to get you a co-host. Great.
That's right.
We got to get you a co-host.
Really,
at least sometimes.
It's really lovely.
It is lovely.
It is. I do. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I need to bring more people in. What I haven't done is done like a co-host and interviewed a guest. So I think that's the next thing I need to do. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Are you all up for a mystery question?
Okay. Sure. All right.
Okay. All right. So I have a stack of prompt cards.
Okay. And my hands are not Googling anything.
Nope. They're mostly fine.
Okay.
If there's anything that's uncomfortable, we'll just veto it and we just move on.
All right, let's do it.
And so I'll read the question and then we'll all answer it. Here we go. Mystery question. What is the most important thing to carry with you all the time? Let's see if we can put that on this camera. What is the most important thing to carry? What's interesting, I thought this question was going to say, what's the most important thing to you to carry all the time? But this is like more broad. So I don't know.
Right.
However you want to answer it, to be honest, because, you know, there's no mystery question police.
Okay.
What is the most important thing?
I wish it wasn't so, but like the thing that I am, the only thing that makes me panic if I'm not carrying it is my phone.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I wish that wasn't the case.
No, you can come up with a better answer than that.
I mean, that is what came to my mind first. I have this thing. I'm the kind of person that loses stuff and then gets really panicky if I like realize that I lost something. So I always have, like, I'm always checking, right?
Yeah.
Always checking. Do I have my phone? Do I have my keys? Do I have my wallet? Always. And so I guess, like, practically speaking, those things would be, you know, the most important, but, that's not that great of an answer.
Right. I feel like there's better answers to this question. Because my first thought went to a personal one. I was like, well, I need my EpiPen.
That's good though.
Yeah, yes.
That feels important. But if it's generic, I think the most important, and we're not talking like phones and keys and wallets, right? We know that's important. Yeah. And I also wanted to say hand sanitizer, but that's like post-pandemic for me, right? I was like, I need some hand sanitizer. I don't feel great. And then this mystery question is just, I'm failing at it. But what it challenged me to do was to like, let me not carry anything. Let me see how it feels to not carry anything and be out in the world and not feel like I am beholden to a thing. Yeah. And again, not your ID and your keys, but, you know, can I walk through the world without feeling like I have to carry anything? And how does that open me up to seeing more of the world? You know, I recently took a solo trip to New York City. And I've been to the city many times, but for whatever reason, I was open. And I'm like, oh my gosh, look at all the examples of humanity. A man spitting on the street, pigeons, right? Like, I was just like, everything, everything was like beautiful and a miracle, right? I was like, I didn't know they did that here. Oh my gosh, listen to the way they put those curse words together. Why did I notice this before? That's my challenge to myself. Like, how can I leave the house? You know, again, key in the pocket, ID in the pocket, God forbid anything happens when I'm like out, and just like be out. And because I want my answer to be like a good attitude, open eyes, you know, like that's what I want my answer to be.
That's it. It's like what you should, the most important thing to carry with you is like joy and wonder and belief that the world can be a good place.
Yes.
And that you belong in it.
Yes, absolutely. I was thinking, like, I didn't carry anything when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
Because I grew up in the 80s and you didn't have phones.
Nope.
I didn't even have a wallet, you know?
Nope.
Like maybe quarters in my pocket to like go play video games.
In your shoes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like, yeah. And so just wandering around and like riding my bike or whatever, like I didn't carry anything except myself. So
I have this conversation connected to our earlier conversation to me with immigrants, and this lyric from the Hamilton mixtape says, "I'm no dummy. Here's something funny. You can be an immigrant without risking your lives or crossing these borders with thrifty supplies. All you got to do is see the world with new eyes." And that's where
nice.
I am. That's where I am. Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep.
I love it. All right. See, we turned that mystery question around.
That's right.
We really did. We nailed it. Val Brown and Andrew Lefkowitz, thank you so much for spending time with me on the Think Inclusive podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been great.
Great conversation.
Welcome back, folks. Here is normally where I put three for me and two for you, a segment where I provide three reflections and two calls to action. I'm going to hit pause on this segment for the foreseeable future for a couple of different reasons. Number one, it takes considerable time to write the reflections, and I want to focus more time on producing more episodes for you and timelier episodes, like the one we did with Glenna Wright Gallo about the U.S. Department of Education and the webinar we did about what's next for IDEA. And since I don't have unlimited time, something has to go. The other thing is I'm not entirely sure that the reflections are useful to you. So if it's something you want back, let me know about it, because I'd love to know more feedback about how to make these episodes more useful for you. Thanks for your understanding. That's it for this episode of Think Inclusive. Time for the credits. Think Inclusive is written, edited, designed, mixed, and mastered by me, Tim Villegas, and is a production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Original music by Miles Kredich. Additional music from Melody. Thank you to our sponsor, IXL. Learn more at IXL.com/inclusive. We appreciate each and every one of you that listens, and we'd love to hear from you about how you are using these episodes. Are you using them for a class that you teach? Are you sending them to your family, friends, and colleagues? Is there a particular episode that really resonated with you? Let us know. You can always reach out to me at tvillegas@mcie.org. That's tvillegas@mcie.org. And if you are listening this far into the episode, it probably means that you love Think Inclusive and the work that MCIE is doing. So can I ask a favor? Help us keep it going by donating at our website, mcie.org. There's a button at the top of our site. Click that and chip in $5, $10, $20. It would mean a whole lot to us and the children in the schools and districts we partner with. Okay, thanks so much for your time and attention. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.